Hey everyone, welcome back to the Life by Taylor podcast, where we learn and grow together. I would have never imagined in my worst nightmares that the world would look the way it does today, since the last time that I recorded a podcast episode for you guys. I honestly planned on recording a podcast episode much sooner. I planned a lot of things, for my business. I moved to a new country. I had a lot of optimism and hope and excitement and really positive energy opening a very exciting and courageous new chapter in my life. And I'm sure there isn't one person listening to this that doesn't know what unfolded in the last month or so. But only 3 days after I arrived in Hawaii and unpacked my bags and showed up for my first Shabbat dinner, I found out I, like the rest of the Israeli community, Jewish community, Israel-loving community, found out that my home, my country, my people were under brutal attack by evil barbarians and terrorists that were terrorizing the entire country, both physically and psychologically and emotionally. I actually found out what was happening through a voice note from my best friend who lives on the border of Gaza on a kibbutz called Kibbutz Re'im, a kibbutz that you probably have heard of now because that's where the party was. And it's a place that I have visited many times, a place that I found to be the most quiet and peaceful place for me to recharge my soul. When I was living in Tel Aviv and I wanted to escape the hustle of city life and I wanted to just find a way to find quiet and listen to myself and hear myself deeply, I would go visit my best friend Veronica. And the way I found out what happened was actually through a really, really scary and emotional voice note from her screaming that there are terrorists breaking into her house. And without context, I wasn't aware that she didn't come back from India yet. So she was in India during this time, but she was so hysteric because her friends who were watching her house were obviously texting her and telling her what was going on. I found out about what was happening as if my best friend was being attacked. And for those of you that don't know, when I moved to Israel in 2012, I also lived on a kibbutz on the border of Gaza, not too far from Kibbutz Re'im, a kibbutz called Kibbutz Neir Yitzchak. The kibbutz was also infiltrated with terrorists, and people I know died that day. People I know were kidnapped or supposedly kidnapped until we found out that they were also killed. And my entire world has been different since. Unfortunately, I was also going through a few challenging things in my personal life before the attacks and the events unfolded in Israel. And I just want to first validate for anyone and everyone that your problems are still valid. Your pain is still real. Your trivial problems are still problems, even if they feel meaningless or they feel unimportant in comparison to war and death and everything that's happening now. So I wanted to make this podcast episode first and foremost, I want to say, selfishly for myself, because one thing I know about being a creative, one thing I know about being someone who uses their voice, their art, their gifts, their content to help people in life, and whether you're an artist or a musician or a baker or whatever it is you do, your creative expression, if you are tapped into it, if you are aware of it, there is a lot of suffering in the moments where you feel like you are not expressing yourself. And for a while now, I've been really in this like hole that just keeps getting bigger and bigger, especially since what happened, where I don't know how to come back on the horse. I don't know what to talk about. I don't know what to do now that, you know, the plans that I had were extremely disrupted by everything that happened. So I decided that I think the best thing to do is what I would probably tell anyone who I love that is in the same situation, is just to say something and express yourself in whatever way. Use that pain, express that pain. Don't wait to feel better. Don't wait to feel strong. Reconnecting to the light during a very dark time has been something that I've really kind of been experiencing and watching outside of myself to remember how we do this, so I can share with others who I know are really deep in the darkness of everything. also to remind myself in the future, because unfortunately and fortunately, or whatever you want to call it, it's a given that life will have darkness and life will humble us many, many times. So to be honest, I want to say that I feel really depressed, actually. I feel like I have a really hard time finding interest, energy, and motivation to do things that usually spark my light or make me feel my purpose in life. And there's a part of me that feels like there's a reason for that as well. You know, I think that these dark times really put everything on pause, really change the way you see the world. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's made me really look deeply in myself and ask myself questions about how I want to serve this world, how I want to use my voice, what I'm here for, what difference I can make. And I think that it's really crucial information for all of us to really ask ourselves these questions in times where we're hurting on such a high level. This pain is a different form of feeling very alive. There's something almost dull about being content and comfortable and living life in ease. And when the world is on fire, when our hearts are on fire, there's something that really gets us to cut through all the bullshit in our life and look at life through the lens of radical, raw truth. It's so interesting to feel this feeling of loss in so many areas. People who you might have thought were your friends, people who you thought you were inspired by or connected to online. There's a lot of feelings of like deep, deep betrayal for a lot of my Jewish and Israeli friends. It becomes much harder to feed into things that are just not rooted in what matters to us. It's a lot harder to watch influencers sell garbage online. It becomes harder to entertain relationships that don't really fulfill us. When we are low energy, then we really get a chance to see, where do I want to use the little bit of energy that I do have? Who are the people that I want around me when I'm going through this? Who are the people who show up for me or even just check in on me? And again, I think it really forces us to ask ourselves, what role am I playing in all of this? Like, where do I feel like I can be of service? And when I first got to Hawaii, my first day at my cousin's house, I looked at her bookshelf because naturally, you know, I see books and I like to just see what people have on their bookshelf. Like 90% of her books were in Hebrew. And there were a few books that I've already heard of, you know, like Tuesdays with Maury or Think and Grow Rich. And I saw the book Many Lives, Many Masters sitting on her bookshelf, a book that was recommended to me, I could probably say more than 10 times in my life. And I've said this many times before, I don't read books that people recommend to me. I always keep note of them, but I really wait for books to call me in because I really think it's important to know when a book is right for you and the timing when you read it and the context that you read it in and in your life really matters and really changes the value it has and the impact or the power it has when you're reading it. So it just felt like it was calling me, to be honest. I was like, you know what? I'm kind of having a hard time reading very dense self-help books. This sounds a little bit more intriguing. I picked it up and read the cover of it, which read, "The true story of a prominent psychiatrist, his young patient, and the past life therapy that changed both of their lives." And it sounded a little bit more interesting than just reading another book on something educational. So I picked it up and I started reading it on the couch the day that I found it. And I asked my cousin and her husband, like, is this your book? Like, can I take it? Neither of them know how it got to their house. Neither of them bought it. Neither of them read it. And I just felt like, okay, this is really weird. I'm going to take this book. I don't remember the last time. Definitely the last time was when I was taking Adderall and Ritalin. But I don't remember the last time that I read a book start to finish so quickly. I opened this book and I was so pulled into it. And not only was I pulled into it because it's really well written and really interesting, it was answering so many open questions I had. Questions that were related to the war, questions that were related to life and death, questions that I had about our purpose and the meaning of life that I was really having a hard time living with unanswered. So I pick this book up and I'm reading it and I just feel like, holy shit, this book is really giving me everything that I need right now. And it brought me so much peace while I was reading it. So I actually started recording this episode yesterday night and was really stuck because I was like, no matter what, force yourself, get on the podcast mic, just talk, just say something. And got frustrated because nothing was flowing and I couldn't think of any ideas. I couldn't think of something I wanted to say. This morning, I went to my cousin's house again. I was playing with her newborn baby. I was watching how she was changing his diaper. And I looked at this baby and I just thought to myself, if what I read in this book is true, okay, if reincarnation is real, if this baby has been here before many, many, many times, and this baby landed into this life on the 18th floor, looking over the view of Hawaii with a mother who really loves him, who's taking care of him with so much love, I looked at this baby and I said, wow, he's so lucky. He is so, so lucky. And I thought to myself, wait, if reincarnation is real, and if I don't know what life I'll have next, this is, again, assuming it's real. I don't like to claim that anything is ultimate truth, but let's just entertain the idea that you reincarnate many, many times in life. If reincarnation is real, and I've been here before and I'll be here again, it opened my mind to how many lives I could have had and how many lives I can have in the future that are less fortunate than mine now, that are more challenging than my life now. And immediately I just felt this really deep sense of gratitude for the life that I live, the life that my soul chose, the life that I am currently in now. And in that moment, I decided that I want to make a podcast episode about this topic and to share what I learned from this book and some of the things that I really took from it, the way it kind of shifted my perspective on what's happening in the world, what's happening in my personal life that's hard for me, and just maybe to give some people some of the relief that I got from this really deep wisdom that resonated for whatever reason. Recently, I would say a little bit before the war started, but definitely after the war, I've started to become a little bit more paranoid than I am normally. Paranoid of death and of illness and really afraid of everything. Like, I get into the ocean, I'm afraid a shark's gonna bite me. I cross the street, I'm afraid a car is gonna run me over. And, you know, very much living in the paradigm of fear, very much hyper aware, hypersensitive, on edge, nervous, and really just paranoid in general. As I read this book and I understood how this woman, without giving too much away, you know, she was someone who didn't believe in reincarnation. She's not like a spiritual person. She worked in a lab. Her psychiatrist who wrote the book, he was also very science-based, close-minded to these concepts. They happened to discover that a lot of her present-day phobias were tied to experiences that she had in the past that made sense. And when she would reveal the story behind, for example, she had a fear of choking for no reason based on her present life. But when he put her into deep hypnosis, they revealed different stories from past lives where she was choked to death or whatever, all these different phobias she had and fears that she had. Now, I don't think to myself like, okay, I'm afraid of getting eaten by a shark because I got eaten by a shark. What's more interesting is that once she was able to share where the phobia originated from, the fear of that thing dissolved, because in every life that she lived, every time she died, after the death, she felt immense peace and deep contentment and deep feelings of understanding what the meaning of her life was, what the meaning of her death was, why her soul chose to die in that moment, what she needed to learn from that experience. And just watching how this woman, hypothetically speaking, lived so many lives with so many brutal things happening to her, so many different deaths, and some when she was a child, some when she was older, some in war, was really fascinating to me because it really relieved my fear of the attachment to my present day life and the fear of getting sick or dying or whatever it is that I was afraid of. It kind of made me make peace with that and remember that, you know, this huge concept that we're so afraid of dying, maybe it's not that scary. Maybe the other side of it, I would say, I believe, is much more blissful and peaceful than life on Earth. And there's nothing to fear. So that was one thing that really shifted for me after reading the book, is just like kind of to zoom out and see my life from a bigger perspective, from a wider perspective. And in general, just to see everything that's happening in Israel, everything that's happening in Gaza, all of the human sacrifices of this conflict, all of the people who are dying in this conflict, it gave me peace to just imagine, hypothetically, again, theoretically, that their souls chose when they came to this earth and chose when they left this earth. And that there's actually deep meaning and purpose in the sacrifice that their soul made. Now, I'm not going to use spirituality to override the pain and the grief and the sadness and the depression that comes with lives lost and the heaviness around the death of people we know and love. Trust me, I understand that from a human perspective, you know, human to human. But it did offer me some faith, and it did offer me some air to breathe during these times to just entertain this concept, to know that these souls are actually in a better place. These souls are in a place where they see things from a higher perspective. They understand the meaning of their mission on this earth and why they came here and why they left when they left, and that they are at peace with it. So that really helped me as well. Another thing that really stayed with me in the book is the idea, in many different lives that she lived, she was different types of people. In one, she would be a Russian woman. In another life, she would be a black man. In another life, she would be in a royal family. In another life, she would be a peasant. And it really helped me look at life and remember that I am you and you are me, and we're literally all one. This like idea of unity consciousness. And I've been doing this a lot lately also, is in a different life, if I was born on the other side of the Gaza border, if I was born to a Muslim family in LA and not a Jewish family in LA, I would be looking at all of reality differently. And I try my best to ask myself, where do these two realities overlap? Where can they actually meet? Where could the alternative version, the alternate universe version of me, the Muslim Palestinian version of me, and the Israeli Jewish American version of me, where do they agree? What do they both feel? What do they both understand? Because when you realize that, like if you actually entertain this idea that in this life, you are this. In another life, you may be something else. Or maybe you already were something else. Can you see past the things that make you feel different or divided or separate from certain types of people? And there's a lot of work to be done there. You know, I think that for me, dating someone who's not Jewish and not Israeli has forced me into the deep work of dismantling the us versus them mentality. This idea that we are different and we are superior morally and we are and they are. And this very dangerous language that really does fuel a lot of the hatred and a lot of the violence that we see today, where there isn't us versus them. Of course, and I said this actually on my podcast episode, I think I'm closing my chapter in Greece. There is a difference between levels of consciousness of human beings. There are human beings that are driven by and motivated by evil and darkness, and there are people who are not. And there is a very big difference between them. We are not all peace and love, okay? But there are people that carry light and love in their hearts and in their souls in all different shapes, colors, sizes, forms, religions, backgrounds, cultures. And it's really important to just entertain that sometimes and remember that sometimes. And I'll do this thing where I walk down the street and I'm like, wow, like I am you and you and you and you and you. And there is no real difference. There is no real difference. And that separation causes a lot of pain for us and causes a lot of pain for the world. So remembering that, I'll explain. So in the book, she goes into these sessions with her psychiatrist. He puts her in a hypnotic state and a deep hypnosis. And she starts sharing all these different details from different lives that she had. When she comes out of this state, she doesn't really remember what she said. She doesn't even want to hear the recording of it. She's just like, thanks, I feel better. I feel lighter. Goodbye. And the psychiatrist is basically mind blown because he's like, holy shit, she knows so many intricate details and names and places and can really describe these lives that she lived so vividly. But when she comes out of it, she has no recollection of anything. Or if he asks her questions, she doesn't know what he's talking about. And each time she dies, there's an in-between phase. An in-between phase when her soul leaves that body. And basically, she describes it as a time to rest and re-energize before it chooses to come back into the physical world. And in that in-between phase, there are master souls. Master souls who basically guide her and teach her and help her understand what the lesson was that she was meant to learn in each life. And these master souls are also communicating through her to her psychiatrist. So I highlighted some of the parts of the book where the master souls give some very deep messages about the meaning of life, the meaning of why we're here, what we're meant to do collectively. That really felt profound to me. So I'm going to share a few of them with you. So in one of her lives, she suffered greatly and died. And in the in-between phase, she started to channel the voice of one of the masters. And she herself knew as she was talking that it's not really her voice. It was like she was listening to something and saying it to the psychiatrist. I know this all sounds crazy, by the way, before I continue, but really, if you read this book, you understand that the psychiatrist himself thought it was crazier than you think it is now. And he really looked at the situation with a lot of skepticism, really went deep into the hole about understanding the science behind this, if there is any, and did research to try to back this, and has dedicated his whole life to this work now. But trust me, it sounds crazier than you understand it is when you start to read the book. But let's go back into it for those of you who don't need that disclaimer. Something she learned from one of the lives that she lived was the following. She says, "I have no faith in these people." And the psychiatrist asked her, "No faith in which people?" And she said, "In the masters." "No faith?" he asked. She says, "No, I have a lack of faith. That's why my life has been so difficult. I had no faith in that lifetime." I'm going to continue reading. She was calmly evaluating her 18th century life. I asked her what she had learned in that lifetime. "I learned about anger and resentment, about harboring your feelings towards people. I also had to learn that I have no control over my life. I want control, but I don't have any. I must have faith in the masters. They will guide me throughout. But I did not have the faith. I felt like I was doomed from the beginning. I never looked at things very pleasantly. And we must have faith. We must have faith. And I doubt. I choose to doubt instead of believe." She paused. For me, as I work through a very difficult time in my life right now with a lot of challenges and a lot of physical obstacles, financially, physically, mentally, emotionally, I needed this reminder that life is more difficult the less faith you have, and the more you think you can control everything, and the more you think that you can control and predict, and this reminder to let go and have faith and surrender was really, really important to me, personally, on a personal level, but also looking at the situation that we're going through on a macro level in the world, to really remember to have faith that everything is God's hand. Everything is happening as it should, without placing my personal judgments and preferences on anything that's happening. Another message that was very clear throughout the book is how much of a waste of energy fear is in general. And I'm noticing how much fear I'm feeling and how little energy I feel that I have. So I know that that is true. That fear is a waste of energy. And I keep reminding myself that. I keep telling myself everything that's rooted in fear is a waste. Everything that I am basing in fear is a waste. The fear of the future of Israel, of the Jewish people, of the Palestinians, the potential for peace not being there, fears that I'm having with myself and my own life, my own questions I'm asking. And I just keep reminding myself that fear is unnecessary. Fear is a waste. Fear is a waste of energy. It's just been like a mantra lately that's also really helped me. Now, in general, I just think that this book gave me such a wider perspective of letting things be as they are and having some deep acceptance of things as is. this book was written in the late 80s. And if you read what he says there, it's like as if he's writing about it today. He refers to things as the state of the world and things that feel like they're crumbling. And it actually gives me hope every time I read things like that, that were written in the past, because I realize that in every generation and in most times throughout history, people thought the end was near and people thought the world was on fire. And obviously we're still here and we've seen good days since then. So it really does help me to remember that. But at the same time, it really just helped me have some deep acceptance and peace with this concept that maybe we live forever, but not really. Part of us will live forever and it will live in a place that is peaceful and blissful and loving and all embracing. And we're here to do work. We're not here to just enjoy ourselves. We're actually here on a mission to do work. There's another message of the masters in the book where they say, teach what you know, share what you know, use your knowledge, and through knowledge, you know God. And that's something that I'm just becoming more and more passionate about, is really empowering people and helping people use their voice and share their message and share their light and share their art and share whatever it is they're frequency of consciousness is to contribute to the world, to be of service to the world. I see in myself that when I'm not doing this, when I'm not recording podcast episodes and making content and using my voice and using my pain and using my lessons to be of service to the world, I suffer greatly. And when I am using my voice and when I am using the level of consciousness that I've either acquired in this lifetime or in many lifetimes before to teach and help others, I feel like I'm here fulfilling my job and my mission. We all have a mission and we all have a purpose here, and we're all here to help and to be of service and to see we are all rowing the same boat and we all have different ways to contribute to the rowing of this boat. And when we are in times of crises, when we're in times where the world is on fire, and I'll use Israel as a prime example of this. In Israel right now, where the country is probably experiencing the most horrific and devastating time it's experienced since its establishment, every single person in the country is looking inward and asking, how can I be of service? What can I give? What can I contribute to the collective? There are banks that are paying scholarships for university students to go volunteer and help the farmers in the South rebuild and maintain their agriculture. And you see mental health providers and you see spiritual healers and light workers hosting free retreats in Cyprus for those that survived the dance festival. And you see Arabs and Israelis and religious and non-religious Jews coming together to make food and serve people and feed people. You see where all of the victims of the southern communities of Israel are staying. Piles and piles of clothes divided into sizes for men and for women, for all ages, donations from all over the country. And this small example of what's happening in Israel, I pray that one day can expand on a global level where we can really see, and I don't think this will happen in my lifetime, but ideally, there's no difference between us. We are sharing this land. We are sharing this world. We are all rowing the same boat. And if each one of us asks ourselves, how can I serve on the highest level based on what I know and what I do or what I'm interested in and what I desire to understand, that is where we need you. And that is part of your mission. We're really here to do a job. We're not here to just live in peace, love, and bliss land. Which brings me to another point they mentioned in the book, which I'll end with, is that this is just a side note. Actually, it's not like a main point, but it just reminded me of it, that they say, do not spend time surrounding yourself with people who have the same level of frequency as you. And a lot of the spiritual community and high conscious beings on this planet are very much of the idea that we need to surround ourselves with good energy and only be with people with good energy. That's not where this world needs you most. That's where you gain the most or maybe benefit the most from being. But they said in the book how the masters ask you to be with people who need you, be with people who actually have lower frequency and help them learn and help build them and help grow them. And that is part of our mission. So my hope for what Israel will do as this conflict unfolds, my prayer is that Israel will be the light onto the Palestinian people as an example, that Israel will eventually reveal its, not Israel the government, by the way, the Israeli people and the heart of the Israeli people will extend beyond the borders of where the Palestinian people live. And they will offer them the same love and support and help to show them who we truly are, not who the world says we are, not who our government represents, but who we really are. And I also hope that it is reciprocated, and I pray that that will happen. But in the meantime, I want each person who's listening to this to know that your voice matters, and that your gifts and talents matter, that they need to be on display. You need to show up in the world, and there's a lot of possibilities ahead, even in dark times. I am going to slowly rebuild and come back to building and creating the program that I was very passionate about creating before this all started, to help people who want to use their self as a force for good in this world, to express themselves and to share their service with the world online. I want to help those people. I find so much joy and so much fulfillment in empowering other people to use their voice that I just know that this is what I need to be doing right now. So if you are someone who does feel called to use their voice, their art, their gifts, their talents in a way that is aligned with their soul through modern day tools and platforms like a podcast or TikTok or Instagram, or even not, even through a book or a screenplay or a script, please contact me. And I will end by saying that I love you all, and my heart is with every single person that is hurting right now. No matter what it's hurting, no matter why it's hurting, no matter what side of this conflict, I'm using quotations, you can't see them, it's hurting for more. My heart is with you. Our hearts are feeling the same thing, and maybe the words that we're using are different, but our hearts are feeling the same pain. And I love you all. That is it. If you haven't already, please review this podcast. If you can, leave a quick review, maybe just a rating on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. And I will be making episodes regularly for you now that we're finally in a stable environment. Love you, and I'll be back next week.